are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope everyone had an awesome weekend as we appear to be closer to, at least maybe beginning to inch closer to sports thinking about returning. Today, we are going to dive into a new weekly series, The Best Moments in Minnesota Timberwolves History. This is another network-wide series across the Locked On NBA Network. We're going to approach this in a bit of a unique way here at Locked On Wolves. Today, we're going to discuss the most memorable individual moments in Wolves history, individual game performances, I should say. Later this week, we'll talk about other individual accomplishments as well as, individual games in terms of most memorable games in Wolves history. And then also we'll have a show talking about miscellaneous organizational moments. So not necessarily on the floor, but watershed moments in Timberwolves history. Again, we're talking about over 30 years now, so I think we can come up with five for each of these days for the Timberwolves. So we'll be talking about that today. There's just a quick bit of news I want to hit off the top too. First, though, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. So again, the only quick news to hit off the top is that the NBA is reportedly, according to Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN, going to allow team facilities to reopen this coming Friday, May 1st, in communities that are loosening their stay-at-home orders. There won't be any organized team activities or group workouts allowed at all by the NBA. And this, of course, doesn't include all the cities that are that have not loosened their stay-at-home restrictions. I live in Oklahoma City. They are loosening those restrictions this Friday, May 1st. So that would imply that the Thunder are going to be able to practice beginning this Friday, at least individually. The league will reportedly work with teams in states where those restrictions are not being loosened. Obviously, places like New York, LA, Detroit are some of the hardest hit areas with COVID-19 right now. And have been. And so reportedly the NBA will work with those teams, any teams in cities that don't have the restrictions expiring or loosening this Friday, to try and find local facilities where players can practice. There's an article on ESPN.com with Woj's report that talked about a conference call between league GMs and Adam Silver, the commissioner, last Thursday. There were some teams that said they had players that were talking about traveling out of state to a place like Atlanta that has 24-hour gyms to go and potentially work out there. And of course, that's not something that the league or the teams want their players to do. And so they're going to look to find some local solutions for players who haven't been able to really work out if they don't have gyms or baskets at home. So that's really the only bit of news related to that. It's certainly, Adam Silver did say in the article that it's certainly not reflective of anything related to a season restart. And it doesn't change the timetable or anything like that. He said that Silver says, and I'm not quoting from Woj's article, quote, owners still believe they need more time for a clearer picture on whether, when, or how they could possibly resume the season. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything other than it's good news, and it allows some of the guys that haven't had a chance to play to have the chance to play. But it doesn't really tell us anything officially at all, but still important to note. All right, so today I do want to talk about the top five individual games, in my opinion, in Timberwolves history. There can certainly be some debate on this, so because of that, I'm going to start by rattling off a few of the other games that stuck out in my mind as I went back through Wolves history, some of the games that just include the highest, the highest scoring of high scoring games in Timberwolves history that aren't going to hit my top five. Of course, there's a few guys who have scored over 50 points. Towns has 56 points. He will be on the list. Spoiler alert. Mo Williams had the 52-point game, the weird outlier of the all-time single-game high scorer in Timberwolves history. Mo Williams had 52 in that game against the Pacers back in that 14-15 season. Corey Brewer had 51, another weird outlier. That was just the year before that. Kevin Love had his 51-point game in Oklahoma City. That was the triple overtime loss that was actually just on NBA TV the other day, or double overtime loss, I should say. And then the true honorable mention that would be at number six on my list is Derrick Rose's 50-point game in the win against the Utah Jazz on Halloween 2018. I couldn't find a space for it on the list just because the magnitude of the game wasn't as high. It was a pretty, you know, we're picking nits here, obviously. This is the sixth best game in Timberwolves history. But he scored 50 on 31 points, 15 to 24 shooting on twos, 4 of 7 from threes, 8 of 11 on free throws, 6 assists, 4 rebounds. He did have 6 turnovers. The Wolves did beat Utah in that game. And of course, early in the season, so there was reason to still be optimistic about that year. This was before the Jimmy Butler trade, but he did not play in this game. He did sit this game out, and so there was still reason to be positive about this team and think that something that they could still make a move to be relevant this season. But unfortunately they couldn't. So that game, and of course everything that goes along with it matters too. So the emotion of Derrick Rose's kind of completing his, in a sense, comeback over the last couple of years of not being a very good NBA player, coming to the Wolves late in the previous season and just being okay, you know, playing okay in the playoffs. And then the controversy of the Wolves re-signing him to what was really a minimum deal that summer, to come out with a bang like that when Butler wasn't playing and drop 50 points, 51 points or 50 points was an impressive performance. And certainly, you know, kind of a watershed moment for him individually, as it kind of signaled the fact that he was back. He had a really good rest of the season, of course, battled with injuries, and has had a good season this year in Detroit after leaving the Timberwolves. So that was a big moment. It just kind of fell right outside the top five for me, but I thought it was important to mention it. All right. The number five moment in Timberwolves history is one that I just mentioned. Karl-Anthony Towns, individual performance in Timberwolves history. Karl-Anthony Towns dropping 56 in the win against the Atlanta Hawks in March of 2018. So earlier in that same calendar year is the Rose game. But at the end of the 17-18 season leading into the 2018 playoffs, the Wolves at the time had not quite clinched a playoff spot. This was when Jimmy Butler was coming back from his knee injury, and he hadn't quite come back yet. The Wolves had been struggling a little bit. They needed a home win. And of course, this Hawks team wasn't good. But Towns was able to drop 56 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists, a block, only 2 turnovers in 41 minutes. Shot 19 of 32 from the floor. That's just a shade under 60%. 6 of 8 on 3-pointers, so 75% beyond the arc. 12 of 15 at the free throw line. And this was a Hawks team that at the time was 21 and 53 coming into the game. The Wolves were 42 and 33 and were, again, as mentioned, trying to secure a playoff spot. He didn't get much help in this game, but he didn't really need it. Andrew Wiggins had 17 points on 13 shots. Nemanja Bjelica had 14 and 6. Jeff Teague had 11 and 8. Jamal Crawford had 10 off the bench. The Wolves only played 8 guys in this game. Some of the guys on the bench that didn't play: Justin Patton, Emile Jefferson, Marcus Georges Hunt, Anthony Brown, and Aaron Brooks. So a bunch of guys that didn't really contribute much to that playoff team. And of course didn't contribute anything to this game either, but this was an impressive performance by Towns. There was a couple moments in the second half where it really truly felt like he couldn't miss. And I think he hit that 56 point mark. He had a big three late in that game. That was, just kind of he throws it up and it goes in, and everybody just kind of expected it because of the type of game he was having. It wasn't really a close game. They won by 12 and they had been up by 8 at halftime. So they kind of held the Hawks at arm's length for the entire game, en route to that win. So impressive performance by Karl-Anthony Towns. It is currently still, we're about 2 years later now, the highest single game point total in Timberwolves history. And thank goodness somebody passed Mo Williams 52 and the Corey Brewer, Kevin Love tie at 51. Still so crazy to me that Kevin Garnett, who's head and shoulders and torso above anybody else, as I said on a previous podcast, is the best player in Timberwolves history. Number 7 on this list, tied with 47 points with Towns and Andrew Wiggins. But that the top spots are Towns with 56, Mo Williams 52, Brewer and Love each with 51. Derrick Rose had 50 in that game we talked about, and then Towns, Garnett, and Wiggins each had a 47 point game as well. So this is number 5 is the number 1 individual scoring game by any Timberwolves player in a single game in Wolves history. So that lands at number 5. All right, next up we're going to talk number 4 and number 3. Before we do that, I want to talk once again about Postmates. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food, and that's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery to. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where to grab lunch anymore. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right, counting down the top five individual games in Timberwolves history. Honorable mention was Derrick Rose's 50-point game against the Utah Jazz on Halloween 2018. Number five was Karl Anthony Towns' 56-point game against the Hawks in March of 2018, leading into that playoff run. Number four on this list is the first Kevin Garnett performance we're going to talk about. Truthfully, there's a host of fun regular season games from Kevin Garnett to choose from. You go through Basketball Reference and look through his game logs, look through the game scores in Timberwolves history, and Garnett, I mean, obviously there's a ton. I mean, he had a ton of 20-20 games, 30-20 games. There's just a lot to choose from. But number four on this list is one of his best all-around games, and a game that the Wolves actually lost, which is part of the reason this performance got dinged just a little bit. This was January of 2005, so the season following the Western Conference Finals run, the Wolves were kind of fighting through a season in which they actually fired Flip Saunders, which still seems crazy looking back on it now. They were 16-12 at this point in time in the season, in January, and they were facing the Phoenix Suns, who were 26-4. They finished the season, the Suns did that year, with 62 wins and went to the conference finals. They were 26-4 at the time. This was Steve Nash at the peak of his powers, really. And the Wolves gave them all they could really handle. Garnett scored his career high 47 points that I mentioned a little bit ago, had 17 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. And Garnett got hot down the stretch to keep the Wolves in the game. Minnesota was down by 15 in the fourth quarter. The Wolves outscored the Suns 35-27 in the fourth quarter, but the Suns were ultimately too much. And, you know, as mentioned, this is one of the best of Garnett's individual games, because his whole thing was he didn't often take games over offensively. He might do it on the boards. He might do it just generally taking the game over, finding open teammates. But what he was able to do in this game was a combination of everything. The 47-17-4, only 3 turnovers. He only shot 11 free throws, which is good, but you'd think he'd shoot more, scoring 47 points without making a 3-pointer. But he was 19-27 on 2-point attempts, which is just a shade over 70%. Missed his only 3-point attempt, 9-11 at the line. Just unfortunate the Wolves couldn't pull this game out, but they had that fourth quarter comeback to get within 7. Other players on this Wolves team, the same starting lineup essentially that went to the finals, the conference finals the previous year: Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell, Wally Szczerbiak was healthy this year, Michael Olowokandi. Szczerbiak had 20 in this game, 20 and 6 assists. Sam Cassell had 24-9. Sprewell had 6-4, didn't really come to the party, and that was kind of the story of that season for Spree. Hoiberg only played 8 minutes off the bench. The Wolves leaned on Trenton Hassel off the bench, Mark Madsen again, Eddie Griffin was on this team, and then Troy Hudson was healthy as well. This game was almost kind of a microcosm of this season. The team was good. I mean, they finished with a winning record at the end of the season, but high expectations were much higher. They were 44-38, but missed the playoffs. Saunders was still the coach at this point, and again, they were 16-12, so the wheels hadn't really fallen off, but by the time they fell under 500, they were 25-26. When Glenn Taylor and Kevin McHale made the change. And this was when Kevin McHale then came down to the bench and finished out the season before heading back upstairs. The Wolves hired Dwayne Casey the following year. McHale ultimately came back down to the bench when Kevin Love was on the team several years later before going to Houston and coaching there. So this was just kind of a weird year. And many years, 44 wins gets you into the playoffs, certainly in the Eastern Conference. So this was just a weird season, but a great performance from Garnett against a really good Suns team. And that is enough for that to be number four on our list. All right, looking at number three on our list, the Kevin Love 30-30 game. This may not have been the most impactful game from an offensive perspective. He actually wasn't ultra ultra efficient in this game, at least not in the sense that we got used to Kevin Love when he became Kevin Love. This was in some ways his breakout. Remember, this is the 2010-2011 season. So Kurt Rambis is the coach. Just kind of setting this up, painting a picture for anybody that doesn't remember the 2010-11 Timberwolves. Love, as a rookie, had played in 81 games, but had come off the bench for half of them, averaged 11-9, been really good. The following season, he was still only a part-time starter as, for whatever reason, Kurt Rambis was refusing to play the player who clearly was about the best on the team, next to probably Al Jefferson at the time. But Love finished that season only appearing in 60 games at age 21, averaging 14-11. So this is the very beginning of the next season. So Love wasn't Love yet. People weren't really knowing what to expect. Kurt Rambis was still the coach. Love came into this game not really being a major part of the rotation yet. In this game with the Wolves at 3-6 coming into it against the Knicks, this is a home game against the Knicks, Love comes in and drops 31 points, 31 rebounds, 5 assists. He only made one three-pointer. This was before he was really unleashed beyond the arc. He was 1 of 4 on threes, 8 of 10 at the free throw line, 11 of 26 from the field. So he only shot 42% from the field. But 31 points, 31 rebounds, 5 assists. The Wolves also got 35, 6, 4, and 3 steals for Michael Beasley in 41 minutes. Wes Johnson had 15 points. Sebastian Telfair started, had 0 points and 8 assists. Darko Milicic was the fifth starter, had 9 points, 4 rebounds in just 20 minutes. Corey Brewer came off the bench, had 12 and 8, 3 steals. The backup point guard in this game, Sundi Ada-Gaines. The backup center, Nikola Pekovic, only played 7 minutes. This was part of Anthony Tolliver's first run in Minnesota. He played in this game. Costa Kufis and Lazar Hayward also saw the floor. And Wayne Ellington was on the roster but didn't play. Coincidentally, he's the only guy on this team, I guess Anthony Tolliver. So Tolliver and Kevin Love are the only two players on this team that played in this game that are still actively playing in the NBA. A couple of these guys have been recently or are still playing overseas. Wayne Ellington would be the third guy, but he didn't even play in this game. So there's Kurt Rambis. The Knicks team in this game, Danilo Gallinari, Raymond Felton, Wilson Chandler, Landry Fields, Amari Stoudemire. So three of those five guys are still in the league. Tony Douglas, Timothy Mozgov, Anthony Randolph all saw the court on off the bench. A little Anthony Randolph shout out there, pre-Timberwolves stint. So two not good teams, I guess, is one way of saying this. They're both, the Knicks are 3-5, the Wolves are 3-6 coming into this. The Knicks actually ended up making the playoffs this year with them. This was the good Amari Stoudemire year. They won 42 games and were swept in the first round by the Celtics. But at the time, they were struggling. The Wolves were also struggling, obviously, and had a bad season. Mike D'Antoni was the coach of the Knicks this year, too. So actually, that's funny. He was the Suns coach on the previous game there, the Garnett game from 2005. So a couple of Mike D'Antoni appearances on this list. So the individual performance here by Love, of course, famously the first 30-30 game in forever in the NBA, really put him on the map. I remember NBA TV covering this wall to wall for what seemed like 48 hours. And then this was his first All-Star season. Love ended up making the All-Star team this year. The rest was history in terms of the league understanding just how good Kevin Love was. Kurt Rambis, it took him a little while longer to understand that, and indeed Rambis was let go after the season. The Wolves the following year in 2011 and 12, that was Rick Adelman's first year following the lockout. So remember, Love becomes an All-Star, has a 20-12 season or whatever it was, makes the All-Star team. The lockout happens the following offseason. And the Wolves finally get Rubio to come over. Rick Adelman's hired, but the lockout happens, so they don't play until December. They have a great start to the season. Rubio tears his ACL. They slide to the finish line. They finish 26-40, but there's a lot of optimism around this team. And it really all started with that 30-30 game by Kevin Love in November of 2010. So that game is number 3 on our list. All right, we're going to finish with number 2 and number 1 and the best individual game performances in Timberwolves history. Okay, I already mentioned there being several individual performances from Kevin Garnett to choose from over the course of his Timberwolves career. And basically, you could come up with a top 5 Kevin Garnett individual performances, and that you couldn't argue with that as a top 5. But I had to pick a couple here for top two. And as it turns out, many of his best games were against the Sacramento Kings. That's how I remember it. And if you go back and look at his game logs against the Kings, it's pretty incredible. One that's not going to make the list, he had in December of 2004. So this is coming out of the conference finals, kind of a, in some ways, a grudge match against the Kings the following regular season. He had a huge game, 35, 18, 9 assists, 4 steals, had made all 13 free throw attempts, shot 50% from the field in a Wolves win. That was actually not that long before. It was only about a month before that Suns game we just talked about a minute ago. So that was a big one that could have made the list. Looking at his others, though, I'm going to go ahead and give... So his Game 7 performance that we talked about a couple weeks ago in recapping the 2004 Conference Finals, that Game 7 performance is going to be number two on my list. This was in May of 2004. This is Game 7. This is second round of the Western Conference playoffs, so the Western Conference semifinals at Target Center. Garnett ends up having a really big game. It actually wasn't that dominant of a performance for much of the game. And there were a couple moments in the second half when he actually struggled and clearly was just gassed. But in fact, even in the fourth quarter, it took him a minute to really get going. But you look at his total line for the game and it was crazy. He just had a crazy performance. 32 points, 21 rebounds, 5 blocks, 4 steals, 2 assists, only 2 turnovers, and only 1 foul committed in almost 46 minutes of playing time. Shot 12 of 23 from the field, so over 52%. Made his only 3-point attempt, was 7-11 at the free throw line. So really the only thing you change about this is maybe he makes an extra free throw or two more. By quarter in this game, he had 7 and 6 in the first quarter. 3 of his steals came in the first quarter. So got off to a hot start. Second quarter played, you know, sat for the first part of the quarter as usual, missed all 4 of his field goal attempts. So he only had 2 points and a block, but he pulled down 7 rebounds in the second quarter. The third quarter, he had 9 points, 3 rebounds and a block, played the whole quarter. Fourth quarter, same thing, played the whole quarter, 14 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks in the fourth quarter alone, 1 steal, 6 of 11 shooting, made a 3-pointer. And for the game, was just a monster. And the Wolves only scored 83 points in this game. Garnett had 32 of them. Sam Cassell had 23. Latrell Sprewell had 14. And Wally Szczerbiak had 10 off the bench. And the only other player that scored was Trent Hassel, had 4. Irvin Johnson, Fred Hoiberg, Mark Madsen, Gary Trent, all those guys played and all of them were scoreless. So this was truly Garnett willing the Wolves to their second ever franchise playoff series win, and only a couple weeks after their first one. This vaulted them into the conference finals against the Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, that didn't end as well. They lost in 6 to the Lakers, but this was the best individual game in franchise history for a number of reasons. If you missed that, you can go back just a few episodes and we talked through this game specifically after I did a rewatch of it. We did studs and duds from the game and talked through really just kind of the game flow and how the game shook out. But Garnett's 32-21, 5 blocks, 4 steals, 2 assists performance is number 2 on the list of the top individual performances in Timberwolves history. So I bet you're wondering what number 1 was. And I'm willing to bet that almost anybody, any big Timberwolves fan could have a different number one that you could argue for. This is one that hits the list for me because of, I remember vividly the way that it ended. And this is an example of Garnett pretty much single-handedly with the help of an opponent winning a game. And to me, that's, I guess what this list is really about, is the sheer numbers and also the impact on winning. So the Garnett game against the Suns may have been his best all around game, but that can't be number one. They lost that game and it just, you know, the stakes weren't as high. In this particular game, Garnett was actually not even the high scorer on his own team, but won the game down the stretch basically single-handedly. The game we're talking about is from December of 2003, Wolves Kings at Sacramento. At the time, the Wolves were only 11-7, had gotten off to, 10-8, had gotten off to a rough start to the season. The Kings were 12-4 and were expected to be really good. Remember, this is a Sacramento team under Rick Adelman that is pretty much a perennial playoff team, had never gotten quite as far as they'd wanted, had gotten to the conference finals previously, and there were high expectations there. The Wolves were still working in Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell. This game took place in Sacramento, December 5th, 2003. Garnett, his final line was 33 points, 25 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 blocks, 1 steal. He committed 5 fouls in 50 minutes of play in an overtime game. He only shot 13 of 29 from the field, so 45%, but he made all 3 of his 3-point attempts, 4 of 7 from the free throw line. So the 33, 25, and 6 with three blocks looks really good. And that alone could have gotten it close to this list. He's actually outscored in this game by Latrell Sprewell, who had 37. Cassell had 26 and 5 himself. But the reason why this hits the list is the overall line, because it was he had a monster game. But you and some of you may remember what game I'm talking about now. The end of this game, the Kings were up by 6 with 29.2 seconds left. The game should have been over. The Wolves, it's not like they had a bunch of sharpshooters on this team in 2003, 2004. And surely, I guess without rewatching it, I couldn't tell you for sure. But, I mean, Fred Hoiberg, I guess he started, so he may have been on the floor, but he was 0 for 3 on threes in this game. Nobody else attempted more than 2 threes to this point in this game. So the Wolves get the ball to Garnett at the top of the key. He drains a three-pointer. Remember, he's a 27.5% career three-point shooter. During this entire season, he was 11 for 43 from three. So he was shooting about a half a three a game, shooting career average just under 26% from three-point range. He hits a three-pointer at the top of the arc with 26.8 seconds remaining. The Wolves follow Brad Miller, future Timberwolves Brad Miller. Brad Miller is just really kind of on the backside of his prime, but he's an 80% free throw shooter for his career. He had 35 points in this particular game. So a good player, a good free throw shooter. Yeah, he's a center, but a really good free throw shooting center. He had already made his first 9 free throws in the game. So this is an 80% free throw shooter, a veteran, scored 35 points in the game, was 9 of 9 on free throws coming to this point in the game. Brad Miller misses both free throws. Garnett gets the rebound, comes down, hits the game tying three on the other end of the court. So he hits back-to-back threes sandwiched around the Brad Miller 2 missed free throws. The Wolves ultimately win in overtime. They outscored the Kings 10-7 in overtime. And Garnett ends up with this monster line of 33, 25, 6, and 3. 3 of 3 from beyond the arc, hits those 2 three-pointers. You get the weird flipping of what should have happened based on averages. Miller missing 2 free throws, Garnett making back-to-back threes, and just stepping up in an extreme pressure situation against a team that they would ultimately see later that year in the playoffs, in the second round of the playoffs. And of course, number 2 game on this list was that game 7 performance against the same Kings team. At the time, the Kings, it was the same team that we saw in the playoffs, except for no Bobby Jackson, who was hurt. So this was a team that had Anthony Peeler, the longtime Timberwolves player. They started Peja Stojakovic, Brad Miller, Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, along with Vlade Divac. Bobby Jackson was their 6th man, and then they played Anthony Peeler off the bench. At this point in the season, Darius Sangalia was in the rotation. Of course, Adelman really restricted his rotation once they got to the playoffs. The Wolves didn't really have a backup point guard. So in the playoffs, they had Derek Martin. At this point, Keith McLeod is playing backup point guard. Irvin Johnson, Gary Trent coming off the bench. Michael Olakande was injured at this point in time, so he didn't play. And Garnett was effectively playing center for stretches in this game. That's really what he did to start the game. He was on the court with 3 wings in Latrell Sprewell, Fred Hoiberg, and Trenton Hassell. So in some ways, this is a really modern starting lineup by Flip Saunders. Irvin Johnson did play 27 minutes off the bench, but it's not like he was a huge part of what the Wolves were doing offensively. So interesting that Garnett played so many minutes at center in this particular game, still ended up with the game tying three-pointer, or three-pointers, I guess, to get the Wolves all the way back, and had a monster performance. And that's clearly number one for me. I vividly remember watching this, and this was an example of a great player being great down the stretch of a game, and at an important part in the season. I can't stress enough, this team was 10-8 at the time, and it wasn't clear whether this adding, you know, this big three of these veteran guys on the backside of their prime in Garnett, Sprewell, and Cassell was really going to, or I should say Sprewell and Cassell were on the backsides of their prime. Garnett was in the middle of his, if adding those guys was going to make a huge difference or not. And this also ended up being Garnett's MVP season. So this is the very start of his MVP year as well. So for a lot of reasons, this game was able to get to number one on my list. If you feel differently, let us know. Let us know on Twitter. Email me, whatever you want to do. But let's talk about what your top 5 games were. This one for me is easily number one. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. We will be talking about top games in Timberwolves history later this week, and then we'll also have a show on top off-the-court moments, or top just general moments, not necessarily specific individual games or individual performances. Will be our final 2 episodes of this week. Again, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. It's draft season. It's a great podcast to give a listen to. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.